Hello, everybody, and welcome to Yellow Chair Collective, the podcast. Today, we have Allison Lee, LCSW. Today, we're talking about first and second generation immigrants and the repay cycle. And I'm really excited to talk about this topic because I am also a first generation immigrant, 1.5 gen. Allison, why don't you start by introducing yourself? Tell me how you became a therapist, maybe some of your journey as to why we're sitting here together today.
Thanks so much for having me on this podcast today. And so I am a LCSW in California. I grew up and was born in California. So I myself am a second generation, meaning my parents were born in another country, Vietnam specifically, but I'm Chinese, so it's confusing. So I grew up with parents who didn't grow up in this country. There was a lot of challenges that I experienced, just language barriers, just access. And I had a lot of access and privileges to things that my parents didn't have access to. Like, I wanted to play sports. They were like, what are sports? And I think without the school system really opening my eyes to different opportunities that were available to me as like a American citizen, it would have been much harder for me to adjust and like figure out what I liked, what my goals are. And even then I still had challenges just because there was cultural between my family and what I knew and what I was learning. So with schools, I had great teachers, mentors, counselors who really helped me like figure out what I wanted to be, how I wanted to show up in the world, and I wanted to give back. So I originally started off working with children because I think children are the most vulnerable population. And I was that child that like got help and support from others. So I really wanted to give back. And as I got older, I noticed too that the adults are still wounded. Some of these adults didn't get the support they needed as children. And being an older adult now myself, like I resonated more with that. So I switched over to working with adults. But I just really love the community and just the first and second generation adults and children. They're so resilient. And I just love this population. And because I resonate with it personally and can work with them professionally, it's just my calling, I think.
That's so relatable because when I first graduated with my MSW, I started working with children too, and they were as young as 5 years old, and they were so fun to play with. But one of the things that you probably notice is like the adult is driving the narrative. The adult is the one who is influencing a lot of the child's behavior. And with all due respect, I think most of the time when a child is displaying a lot of disruptive behavior or a lot of tantrums, it can come from what's happening in the home and what the parent is going through. And the child is just trying to regulate all of these like uncomfortable emotions that they're feeling. And so can you speak more to this transition that happened to you in your career from child therapist to adult therapist and why?
Yeah, and what's interesting is so I was at a community mental house, and what the clients that I had there, I mostly worked with teenagers who were in high school. And that just happened to be the type of clients I got. They were also first and second gen because I worked within the San Gabriel Valley area. And they themselves were just already so mature. We were already talking about things that I talked to adults about, like looking back. So it wasn't even that we were just talking about like, my friend got mad at me at this. And even though that's important too, but it was like also very mature for their age. So the transition actually wasn't that hard or drastic because just the types of clients that I had, they were already so mature and already had like such deep thoughts and great insights that it was a pretty seamless population shift other than like the number in terms of age.
Yeah. And the reason why I wanted to have you on is because I think because you specialize with first and second generation Asian Americans, can you speak to your own experience as a person living in this country and having parents come from a different culture and why this gap is like this narrative is still existing, why so many people struggle to understand like, okay, my parent is this way and this is how families always run in Vietnamese culture, Filipino culture, from me personally. And then you grow up in this country and there's so many barriers to being a child, being a teenager. And so what patterns have you noticed keep coming up with some of your clients?
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah. Even now as an adult, like the gaps and the challenges are still existing.
Yeah.
But some of the patterns I think predominantly start with language first. Even with technology these days and just having more access to different knowledges. Even within the Asian American community, there's so many different languages. And even within like my own immediate family, we speak Vietnamese, not me, my parents speak Vietnamese and Chu Chow, and they spoke something else. But just having access to understand information is so important, right? And when there's so many dialects, and if even the more common dialects aren't available to have the information be given to anyone, it's just really hard. I think that's just like the main thing. And I think a lot of fear, just because assimilating, acculturating, and just adjusting to a new country just takes a lot. So there's a lot of trust that needs to be built. And when people don't see people of similar skin color or like interest language, it gets really hard to build that trust to actually even explore and do more. And so then that's when progress is hindered, right? Like maybe job opportunities is less. There wouldn't be as much like time to spend with the community because you're fearful of going out or don't know who to talk to when you are out. And so I think language is such a huge thing. And then when children who later become adults have access to that language, a lot falls on them just naturally because they have that privilege of being able to speak English or whatever other language that can help the family. So I think just naturally having the differences in language and being able to like just feel comfortable even asking questions and obtaining the resources is like the main theme that I'm seeing.
Yeah. I was actually just talking to a friend about this, that linguistics really does play a role in what is and is not understood, because there's differences in tonality with different languages. Like the way that my mom speaks in Tagalog is very different from the way that it's interpreted in American language. I remember growing up as a kid in elementary school, and I would just tell my friend what my mom said to me, and she's like, "Your mom's mean." I was like, "No, she's not. She was telling the truth." And so even that is so subtle, but it gets in the way of people's perception of their parents, because it's, oh, my friends say my mom is mean, but they don't and when you're a kid, you're like, oh, they must be right. They must be seeing something that I'm not seeing. And I've noticed even with the clients that we treat at Yellow Chair, that clients carry the burden of having to be the translator for their parents or having to order for their parents and having to explain it to their friends that that's why their Asian American culture is that way. And so can you explain what this concept called like the repay cycle is and why it's important for people to start to understand this?
Yeah. So this is something I see with a lot of my clients that I work with. And in this repay cycle that I've thought of and tried to put together to simplify, because I think when we have a framework, it also helps us look at the big picture and help us understand like what's happening. Because when you're in the midst of it, in the details and the deep of it, it's really hard sometimes to look at the bigger picture. So this framework I have thought of has four pieces to it. First is awareness, then is the repay, then there's self-sacrifice, and then there's mixed emotions, and then we go back to the awareness. So in the awareness, being a first and second gen, the child slash adult, they themselves could have that awareness of the differences in access and privileges that they have. So they themselves could be the ones that want to give back to the family, right? Oh, I can speak English, so let me help them with this. I can do paperwork. I want to help them. It could also be from the parents or the caregivers, grandma, grandparents, right? Wanting that assistance because they know they are also aware of the fact that they don't have that skill, the knowledge, or whatever it might be to complete this task that needs to be done for the family. Then the awareness could also be on both ends, right? Like the child, adult could be like, I want to give back. And then also there's pressure from family to give back and help out. So that's the awareness. So when we have that awareness, it leads to wanting to repay. So repay means like wanting to give back. And again, it could be their own desire or it could be pressured. So when they're repaying, they can be helping out with time, could be helping out with money, could be helping out with just like around the house, doing chores, or even like emotional support. Because again, going back to the language piece, if there is not a lot of people to talk to who are they going to talk to? So then the repay can be done in those ways, for example. And of course, the financial piece might be more so for adults, where once they're able to work. Then it comes to the self-sacrifice. So when this happens and we see our loved ones benefiting from it, we are helping them, we feel good, we may end up like doing it even more, where this either, again, could be self, I don't know if self-imposed is the right word, or self, they just chose it themselves, or it could also be asked. Because we're good at doing this, we're the only ones who know us how, then it just keeps getting asked of us. And it leads to self-sacrifice eventually, when then we're so tired, we're burnt out from helping other people, from wanting to give back, that we end up sacrificing either our own time, our own interests, our health, our mental health, where it might be to like give back, right? So that repay. Then when the self-sacrifice happens and we're noticing some different emotions, like we might feel guilty, that we're upset, we might feel upset, we might feel resentful, we might feel anxious. Is this the right thing? So just even imagining like a teenager helping a parent fill out paperwork, how much anxiety is that to be like, is this right? Is this is wrong? It feels like it falls on me, which like it does and it doesn't. So it's like really intense. So when that mixed emotion happens, there's so many different ways that we can go with that. And then, but then the cycle continues that we have awareness. I'm the only one who knows how to fill out this paperwork. I want to help out my family. And then it just keeps going in a circle, right? And when that happens so much, that's when I see my clients and a lot of first and second gen burn out. They are burnt out, they're overwhelmed, they're depressed, they could be anxious. They're just like really tired of just doing anything, that they don't take care of themselves. So that's what I've come to call the repay cycle. And I think just being aware of where we are at could also help, so that we can know, okay, am I in the awareness phase again? Like, and can I do something different about it? Or is there, I just have to go move along this? Or how do I take care of myself knowing that I feel angry, upset, or guilty, or whatever it might be?
Wow. I think what you did in the structure of this narrative is, you, I think in storytelling structure, they call it like twisting the knife, where I can imagine for the listener who is a second generation immigrant having to take care of all of these things. Like, one of the biggest questions that someone might be asking is, okay, Allison, so what? Okay, like you told me my entire life, you told me that this is what I'm struggling with. What then is the solution? How then can someone get out of this burnout and begin healing? Yeah,
I think it's hard. It's really hard, because I think having the knowledge that this is happening in the first place can be also hard to sit with.
Yes.
Just knowledge alone. And then thinking about like, where am I? So for example, if we're in the mixed emotions piece where we're feeling angry and resentful and irritable, I think it's just practicing that self-compassion, right? It makes sense that I would be angry towards my mom, my dad, my grandma for helping them with this paperwork for the fifth time because I'm tired, right? And it's not to say that we won't do it, but it's just to have that self-compassion and really understand that, yes, you are going to be upset and that's fine. It doesn't mean that you hate them. It doesn't mean that you're not going to help them, or maybe it will, but that's up to you. It just means that there's a reason for this. You didn't wake up, I'm going to not like my parents today. And I think that's really important for being aware of where you are at in the cycle. And then when you go back to awareness, I think also being aware of the fact that, oh, like I feel this way because of these things. Is there a way that I could also then lessen that? Can I ask someone else for help? Can I do this tomorrow? Or what else can I do to take care of myself if I'm feeling burnt out, right? So that we just don't continue the cycle in the same intensity. Maybe it's still going to be the same cycle, but at least we can add in 10 minutes of not talking to anyone in my room or outside or something like that. It just doesn't intensify so much that we end up not doing anything, or we get stuck in the mixed emotions for too long and we just don't feel good.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you say self-compassion, giving yourself the space to not do anything, giving yourself time to just pause. And for a lot of people who grow up in like very Eurocentric systems, one of the things that's very common in American, like just white American culture, is just cut your parents off, or don't talk to your parents, or your parents are narcissists for wanting you to do that. And so I want to bring this to the table, because I think that so often when children of first generation immigrants come to Yellow Chair or your office, this is often the advice that they hear from their friends. And so what would you say to that?
I would it's not that simple, right? What you just pointed out, it's not that clear cut. And I think really just holding the two values, I don't know if values is the right word, but two views and also two different emotions, right? I think there's always, it's always going to be important to just balance both perspectives and not go into an all or nothing thought, which is this is all wrong or this is all right. This is never going to be fun, like good, and this is never going to fix itself, right? Not falling into those kind of thought patterns, because that's not helpful. And just like that suggestion that sometimes people get, it's also not that simple. So holding both perspectives, and again, this is where that awareness and maybe reflection piece can come in, of recognizing that this is the reality for some people and it's not my reality, right? What are my values? Do I want to just cut my family off? And if that's a no, which for a lot of first and second gen it isn't, how can I actually take care of myself so that I continue to take care of them longer? Because at this rate, if I just keep burning out and keep doing more and sacrificing, it might eventually go down that road, right? Like maybe entirely.
A lot of resentment
builds up, and then it will be easier to fall into that. So like, how can we make sure that we still take care of ourselves while taking care of other people? How can we validate the fact that it is really hard to not just cut them off also, which might be an easier thing, and holding that love and then that resentment and then that anger, and then just really deciding like how we want to show up, right? So setting boundaries is a good thing that is really tough to do. I forget how hard it is to do sometimes. And I think about it, I'm like, actually, it is really hard to set boundaries with people, especially ones that you love, with ones that like really don't have a lot of other support.
Yeah. Can you role play what a boundary can look like for a client?
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, let's say paperwork, right? It's like kind of an easy one. Let's say someone asks, a mom, parent asks you to complete this paperwork that looks like it's 10 pages long, and you've just come home from work, you're tired. I don't know. We don't sit in traffic too much these days anymore, but let's say you did, and you just really want to sit and watch TV and eat for 30 minutes. So setting a boundary verbally could say, I will help you. Give me 30 minutes. Let me eat and rest and I'll get to this. And it may not be that simple. And especially if the other party is also really anxious or really wants this thing done, it may not be received that easily, but it could just be expressing that. Or another way to do that without even having the conversation is just taking the paperwork and then say, I'll do it. I'll give it to you whenever, like tomorrow or in 2 hours, and just don't look at it until you actually rest. So that could be like a subtle, more subtle way to set a boundary where you don't actually have to like have that conversation, especially if you know it's not going to go well. Or really just so boundaries, you could do boundaries with time, like with space, and just like verbally telling someone. So maybe if you really can't get away from it, if they keep knocking on your door, you say, I need to go out for 30 minutes and I'll be right back. Like, hopefully that works. It depends on the family dynamics and all of that, but that could be some ways to try to set boundaries that isn't, no, I'm not going to help you. Don't talk to me ever again. Don't, you know, that extreme thinking.